When Mark Winger called 911 to report an intruder in his home, police arrived on the scene to find two people clinging to life. One was his wife, Donna, who had been beaten with a hammer, and the other was the man who had broken in, now suffering from two gunshot wounds inflicted by Mark. Investigators determined that Mark had shot a man who had broken into his house and attacked his wife, and it was quickly ruled self-defense. But over the next few years, it would be discovered that Mark was not the hero he was being made out to be. This is Monsters. Mark Winger was born on November 26, 1962 near Cleveland, Ohio. He had two older siblings, a brother and a sister. He had an average childhood, and after receiving a bachelor's degree in physics in 1985, he was commissioned as a second lieutenant in the U.S. Army. After a two-year stint, Mark got a job as a nuclear engineer in Riviera Beach, Florida. Donna Brown was born on November 10, 1963 in Hollywood, Florida. Donna was extremely committed to her family. Her mother, Sarah Jane, was her best friend, and she was very close to her two younger sisters. After graduating from high school, Donna wanted to work in a field that had a positive impact on people's lives. She eventually settled on the medical field. At 24 years old, Donna was an operating room technician who was set up on a blind date by a coworker named Greg Winger. Greg was a nurse anesthetist, and he told Donna all about his brother Mark, who had been an officer in the Army and had recently moved to the area. Donna hadn't had much luck with men before that, so she was pleasantly surprised when Mark turned out to be soft-spoken and caring. He was smart, funny, and kept himself in good shape. At the same time, Mark was drawn to Donna's beauty and the ease at which he could talk to her. At the end of the date, there was a goodnight kiss, and 6 months later, Mark proposed to Donna. She said yes. The couple were married on March 4, 1989. That same year, Mark was offered a job at the Illinois Department of Nuclear Safety in Springfield. Donna had never been away from Florida or her family, but it was a good job offer and it would give Mark a chance to be closer to his family. Donna got a job at Springfield Memorial Hospital and the couple began trying to start a family. Unfortunately, the baby they were so hoping for was proving to be more elusive than expected. After years of trying to start a family, the couple finally realized that something must be wrong and they talked to their doctor. That's when Donna discovered that she had a defect with her fallopian tubes that would make it impossible to conceive a child. Like many couples who are not able to have children of their own, the Wingers decided the best option would be to adopt. In December of 1994, Donna learned of a teen girl who was seeing an OBGYN at the hospital because she was pregnant. Not only that, but she was interested in putting the baby up for adoption. The Wingers got an attorney and went through the legal process of adopting the baby who was expected to be born in mid-1995. Just before the baby was born, the biological father showed up and wasn't sure he was going to sign away his rights, but he finally realized it was the better option for the child, and on May 27th, the Wingers welcomed their daughter, Bailey. Donna was overjoyed at her new life as a mother and couldn't wait to see what the future held for her family. Little did she know she would only have 3 months with her daughter before a monster would remove her from the world. Near the end of August of 1995, Mark was going to be away at a conference in Chattanooga, Tennessee, so Donna used the opportunity to visit her parents in Florida. She arrived in Florida in the middle of August and spent a week visiting. Her parents and her siblings all took every opportunity they could get to fawn over little baby Bailey. But on the 23rd, it was time for them to return home. The Wingers lived about 2 hours away from the St. Louis airport, so when Donna and Bailey returned, they were driven home by a shuttle service. Allegedly, the driver had started having strange conversations with Donna, saying he heard a voice in his head telling him to do bad things. The voice in his head, named Dom, was telling him to hurt people. If that wasn't uncomfortable enough, the driver started hitting on her, inviting her to sex parties. On top of that, he was speeding and driving erratically. Donna was relieved to finally get home, and once there, she called her sister and told her all about the harrowing encounter. They both agreed that they were safe now. They'd gotten through it, and they would just move on. But it didn't seem that Donna was able to move on. Over the next few days, the winger started getting strange phone calls, and they believed they were from the driver who was now stalking Donna. The couple called the company and filed a complaint, which caused the company to suspend the driver while they investigated. Then, Mark convinced Donna to write down the story in order to keep everything documented. At just after 4:30 p.m. on August 29, 1995, Mark called 911 and reported that a man had broken into their home and attacked Donna. He explained that he had shot the man, who was now on the floor, and his wife was in bad shape. When police arrived on the scene, both Donna and the man were still alive, and they were both rushed to the hospital. Investigators found the man's wallet on him, and inside his ID said he was Roger Harrington. According to Mark, Roger had come into their home and started beating his wife with a hammer. At the scene, Roger's car was parked outside, and when they searched it, they found a note that said Mark Winger, their address, and 4:30 p.m. Investigators sensed something was off, so they went back inside and spoke to Mark. He said that he had been working out on a treadmill when he heard Donna fall upstairs. When he got to the master bedroom, he saw their three-month-old baby lying on the bed, completely unsupervised. Knowing that Donna would never leave their infant like that, he knew something was wrong. Then he heard another noise, so he got out his gun and went into the hallway where he saw a man beating Donna with a hammer. He claimed that he shot the man, who fell backwards onto the ground, and when the man sat up, he shot him again. When investigators told him that the man's name was Roger Harrington, Mark said that he was the man that had been harassing Donna. He told the investigators about the encounter with the shuttle driver and showed them the story that Donna had written out. He said he had never actually met Roger in person, so he didn't recognize him, but he knew his name. It wasn't long before news broke that both Donna and her attacker had died from their wounds. Mark broke down when he found out that his wife was gone. Detectives took the evidence in front of them and determined that Roger had murdered Donna and that Mark had killed Roger in self-defense. In an instant, Mark was suddenly the single father of an infant daughter, and his family could tell he needed help. Family members noticed that Mark was distant, he was drinking more, and that he was watching violent movies. Of course, everybody grieves in different ways, and they chalked his behavior up to the grieving process. They thought that getting him some help with Bailey would be a good step to help relieve some of his stress. They hired a woman named Rebecca Simic to be a nanny to little Bailey. Family members recalled that Rebecca was a perfect nanny. She was great with the baby and had a wonderful personality. The initial relief that Mark had someone to help ease his troubles was short-lived, though. Just 6 months after hiring Rebecca and just over a year after Donna's death, Mark took his nanny on vacation, and when they returned, they were married. On top of that, Rebecca was pregnant. Soon the newlyweds moved into a new home and started their own family, adding three more children to the household over the next few years. While Mark was moving on with his life, other people were asking questions. The first were Roger Harrington's family. His parents were obviously devastated at the loss of their son, but the fact that he was said to have attacked a woman and was killed in self-defense created a whole other level of pain and confusion. Roger's sister called investigators and insisted that Roger had never been violent or angry. As you've probably heard many times on this very show, the family members of people who commit horrible crimes tend to live in denial of what that person was capable of, so the detective assigned to the case didn't take the call too seriously. The Harringtons scraped together enough money to bury Roger and tried to move on, but something never seemed quite right about what had happened. Ira Drescher, Donna's stepfather, had also done some poking around to find answers to questions he had after his stepdaughter's death. Mainly, he wanted to ensure his granddaughter was being taken care of, and he was concerned about Mark's finances. After Mark and Rebecca got married, they announced they were moving to a farmhouse in Pleasant Plains, about 18 miles or 29 kilometers outside of Springfield. The house was on 4.5 acres, or over 18,000 square meters, and needed some work, which Mark was doing himself. The biggest question that Ira had was how exactly Mark had afforded to purchase such a property. Ira eventually found some paperwork in Mark's office outlining a $150,000 life insurance payout, as well as a $25,000 payout collected from the State Victims Compensation Fund. Ira wasn't entirely comfortable with Mark's financial decision, but he didn't think it was his place to say anything, and as long as Bailey was being taken care of, that's all he needed. The other person who was causing problems with the Winger family was Donna's best friend, Deanne Schultz. She was the only person who seemed to not like Rebecca, and it turned out that there was a very specific reason. In 1999, Deanne met with the detectives who had worked the murder case and told them that she had information about the Wingers. Detectives Doug Williamson and Charlie Cox met with her and her lawyer, and she told them that she was actually having an affair with Mark at the time of Donna's murder. She said the affair started about a month before the murder and that Mark broke it off with her a few months after. During that time, Mark had confided in Deanne that he wanted out of his marriage to Donna. He resented her for not being able to have children, but he was afraid that if he divorced her, she would take Bailey and return to Florida. That wasn't the end of the story, though, as Deanne went on to tell the detectives that once Mark had exclaimed that it would be easier if Donna just died. She tried to shrug it off as a bad joke, but he went on to tell her that he had been thinking about it for a while and even hinted that she might help. He suggested that while he was out of town for work, an intruder would break into the house and kill Donna, and Deanne could be the one to show up and discover the body. She told him that she would never do anything like that and thought he was just blowing off steam, but then he brought it up again a few days later. She demanded that he stop talking that way. If they were going to be together, they would have to divorce their spouses. When Donna was murdered just a month later, Deanne wouldn't let herself believe that Mark was involved, but over the years, the truth continued to eat away at her until she couldn't keep it a secret any longer. Now, that still wouldn't have been enough reason for detectives to dig into a closed case, but it turned out that Detective Charlie Cox was also having some second thoughts about what had really happened that fateful day. There were pieces of evidence that seemed a little off, but not enough to raise major concerns. That was until it became noticeable that Mark's behavior was off after the death of his wife. He contacted authorities long after the case was closed, and it seemed like he was just fishing for information. Not long after the murder, he asked for his gun back, and his behavior was just unusual. Then, when Mark announced that he was getting remarried about a year after the murder, Detective Cox started to pull up some of those pieces of evidence that didn't seem quite right. First, there was the note inside Roger's car that had Mark's name, address, and the time 4:30 p.m. on it. It seemed more like he was going to a meeting than planning a murder. It had always surprised investigators that Roger's car was parked right outside of the house. It was as if he didn't have any concern about being seen. You'd think he'd park his car a few blocks away and then walk to the house to try to hide his identity. But then, Roger's coffee cup and cigarettes were found inside the house. Why would someone who was planning a violent attack bring their coffee and cigarettes inside with them? Maybe if the cigarettes were in a pocket, but these weren't. They were sitting on the kitchen table. And then there was the cup of coffee sitting right there with them. It just didn't make sense. When they coupled that with the fact that there was no signs of forced entry, it was clear to investigators that Roger Harrington had come to the Winger house in order to meet with them about something, not to attack Donna. Detective Cox and Williamson asked their superiors if they could reopen the case, but they were turned down. A closed case is not something the police liked to reopen unless there was good cause. After Deanne told them about the affair and Mark's murder plans, they had the evidence they needed to reopen the case and start trying to figure out where those missing puzzle pieces fit. After careful examination of the evidence at the scene, including the positions of the bodies and spatter patterns, investigators realized that the scene did not tell the same story that Mark had. The position of the bodies along with blood spatter did not add up to what Mark had said happened. The blood spatter from striking Donna with a hammer was all on Mark, not on Roger. The locations of the bullet holes didn't line up with the way Mark said he had shot the alleged intruder, and Roger's body was lying the opposite direction of the way it should have been if Mark's story was true. They also questioned how Mark would have heard Donna fall onto the carpeted floor upstairs while he was running on a treadmill. And if he had, why did he go into the bedroom instead of the room she had supposedly fallen in, the dining room? In December of 1999, the allegations against Mark Winger were made public, and the community was reeling from the revelation. Authorities laid out their new theory of the crime. On August 29, 1995, Mark had lured Roger to their home, possibly under the guise of meeting to settle the ongoing dispute they were having. Roger showed up in his car, parked out front, leaving the note with the address and time in the car, grabbed his coffee and smokes, and headed into the house. They believed that Mark let Roger into the house while Donna was in the bedroom with Bailey. Mark had his gun and a hammer ready to immediately carry out his plan. He shot Roger and picked up the hammer. When Donna heard the shots and came into the dining room, he beat her to death with the hammer. Then he shot Roger again before he called 911 and reported that he had just shot an intruder who was attacking his wife. Despite telling investigators that he had fired two shots in rapid succession, their neighbor came home just after 4:30 p.m. and said they heard a single gunshot. Authorities believe she only heard the second shot that came minutes after the first. The sad reality of that timeline of events was that Roger's roommate Susan Collins had already explained that that was what had happened back in 1995. When she was questioned about her roommate after the crime, she told investigators that she had last seen Roger at 3:20 p.m. when he told her he was going to meet the husband of a woman who had filed a complaint against him. Susan had also told investigators at the time that Roger had told her about the ride that Donna had complained about. He said they had a perfectly normal conversation that eventually turned into the subject of Ouija boards and that he had told her that he had a guardian angel named Dom. Roger told Susan that he had no idea what had offended Donna during their drive. She was also there when Roger took the call from Mark and she gave him the slip of paper he wrote the time and address on. Like Roger's family, she told detectives that he was never violent or angry. On August 23, 2001, just days shy of the murder's 6th anniversary, Mark Winger was arrested for the murders of Donna Winger and Roger Harrington. When Detectives Cox and Williamson entered the Department of Nuclear Safety, Mark caught sight of them and immediately ran. He was found hiding in one of the offices and taken into custody. Mark Winger had murdered his first wife and was now going to leave his second wife for prison. Jessica was understandably shocked and didn't know what to believe. Investigators told her their case against her husband was solid and that she should drain their bank accounts sooner than later. The evidence at the trial, along with Deanne's testimony, sealed Mark's fate pretty easily. He was found guilty of two counts of first-degree murder and sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. But then, despite insisting he was innocent the entire time he was on trial, Mark went on to prove just how big of a monster he really was. In spring of 2005, Mark asked a fellow inmate to help him plan the murders of two people. One was unsurprisingly Deanne Schultz, the woman who had testified against him in court, but the other was a man named Jeffrey Gelman. Who's Jeffrey Gelman? Well, he was a childhood friend who Mark had asked to post his $1 million bail for him, and Jeffrey declined. It seemed that Mark was so petty that he wanted someone to kidnap Jeffrey for ransom and then kill him, all because he reasonably wouldn't pay someone else's $1 million bail. In June of 2007, Mark was sentenced to an additional 35 years in prison for solicitation of murder. Not only was Mark Winger a selfish monster who murdered his wife, but also murdered an innocent man as a way of covering up the murder. Then when he was caught and sent to prison, he tried to murder the people that helped put him there. The classic monster mentality of me, me, me.
If you're the victim of domestic abuse, please reach out to someone for help. Please talk to your local shelter or call the National Domestic Abuse Hotline at 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233, or you can go to thehotline.org to chat with someone online. This website is set up so that, at any time, hitting the escape key twice will take you to a Google search page. That way, if your abuser is nearby, you won't get caught seeking help. If you're having feelings of harming yourself or someone else, or even just need someone to talk to, please contact your local mental health facility. Call 911 or call the National Suicide Prevention Hotline by simply dialing 988 in the United States. They're available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and will talk to you about any mental health issue you may be facing. If you are a member of the LGBTQ+ community and suffering from discrimination, depression, or are in need of any support, please contact the LGBT National Hotline at 1-888-843-4564 or go to lgbthotline.org. Thanks so much for letting me tell you this story. If you enjoyed it, subscribe on whatever platform you're on, hit like, rate us, or leave us a comment. You can check out our other show, Somewhere Sinister, on YouTube or anywhere you listen to podcasts. If you'd like to support the show, check out our merchandise at thisismonsters.com. The link is in the description. Thanks again, and be safe.